Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host. And if this is your first Geekscape, well, I'm not going to ask you to defend yourself. I'm not going to be like, hey, where you been? You've got a life. I acknowledge it. Maybe the people who ended up on Geekscape ended up because they didn't have a life and they ended up being geeks. But you know what? We rule the roost now. There are geek movies, geek television shows. Video games are the hottest sellers, and people are turning comic books into major multimedia properties. The geeks have won, let's just face it. So we celebrate them here at Geekscape, and we do that every single week and have for a long time. We've got our good friend Matthew Milligan on the show. He is the bassist for Wheatus, and he's also been involved in tons of other musical projects with friends of ours like MC Lars, Mega Ran, and he's also worked with people like Weird Al Yankovic. He now has a podcast on this very Geekscape network called Weird Algorithms, where he and Matt Kelly, you've heard of me talk about him on the show if this is not your first Geekscape, they dissect, deconstruct, maybe it's mathematical, a Weird Al song every single episode, and they're working themselves through Weird Al's very daunting filmography. It's that kind of like attention to detail that maybe makes them geeks. I will tell you though, the numbers on that show are climbing really well. So I'm very happy to have them on the network. And I'm excited to talk to Matthew about it. They're also going a bit viral. You may know, about a couple of weeks ago during Comic-Con, I added a little TikTok. There's a Geekscape TikTok. The username is Geekscape. And on TikTok, there are these different viral things going that the kids love to do. And Matthew Milligan of Wheatus, well, the Wheatus song, Teenage Dirtbag, is going super viral right now because there's like a Teenage Dirtbag challenge where you film yourself present day. And then when it kicks into the chorus, you put up pictures of yourself in your teenage years. Go to the Geekscape profile on TikTok. You'll see that Jonathan has partaken in that one challenge. That's the challenge that I did. That trend, as they say on TikTok. I'm learning it, folks. I'm learning it. Okay, so we got that going on. Geekscape's getting pretty busy here. This guy is getting married in a little over a month, and I am booking myself solid with Geekscape guests. We got some amazing ones coming up. Next week, we're talking to James Kachalka, did I get that right? From Monkey vs. Robot, the comic book. That he's got a new one coming out from IDW. I just heard that Jeff Fahey, the lawnmower man himself, wants to come on Geekscape and talk to me for a little bit. That'll be fun. And I also have a conversation with Neil Abute coming up. He directed Nurse Betty in The Company of Men, and he's got a brand new movie, the remake of House of Darkness, coming out soon. So it's a pretty packed schedule here at Geekscape. It's a lot of fun, though. I love it. We're broadcasting this live on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook. If you're listening to this on the podcast stream, then you're all set. You're all set. You're going to see all that content. Some of these episodes are not live streamed. I pre-record them. So if you want to hear the conversations with people like Jeff Fahey, Neil Abute, whoever I've got coming up sometimes, the best way to ensure that is you subscribe to the Geekscape podcast. If you subscribe to a Geekscape podcast, the Geekscape podcast, the flagship show, you won't miss a thing. I'll throw a little bonuses on there. It's fun. I'm not going to ask you to join a Patreon. I'm not going to take money out of your pocket. All this stuff is free. All you got to do is subscribe. All right? That's how it works around here. Now that we got that little bit of business out of the way, let's start the show. All right, babies, are you all warmed up for some Geekscape? Matthew Milligan's co-host on the Weird Algorithm podcast, Matt Kelly, he's ready. He says, let's go, baby, from the safety of the YouTube channel. And Chris Folios is having a little bit of a problem. Chris is the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast produced by Geekscape. And he says, hey, I decided to watch on Twitch. And then a few seconds later said, I decided not to watch on Twitch and instead to watch on YouTube. And Matt Kelly says, love that about you, Chris. So they're watching at least those two. So that's fun. They're staying busy on a Monday night. All right. Let's just cut to the quick. Let's get Matthew in here and let's talk to him. Matthew, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm good, Jonathan. How are you?
Good. Welcome. I want to welcome you officially to the Geekscape Network.
Thank you. Thank you and so much.
This is the Island of Misfit Toys that we have built for ourselves right here.
Yeah, it's great. This is the first time I've explored a different corner of the Geekscape Network since I joined.
What do you mean?
Well, it's a different, I'm usually in the weird algorithm corner with Matt Kelly over there. This is like a different room. I've got this background behind me I can see on screen. We're not a video podcast, so we don't pay attention to the video stuff quite the same way. So it's just, it's a whole new thing.
Yeah, those guys, listen, I don't mean to throw stones in glass houses. But
no, let's do it right away.
They got a little thing, little crutch. It's called editing. All right.
Oh, boy.
All right. If you really want to roll with the big dogs, you got to go live. You got to have the flubs and you got to not know what the hell you're talking about. You can't go back there. You can't go back and be like, wait a minute, I sound like a total idiot.
Fix those moments where you said the dumbest thing ever. Yeah, it's true.
There's no picking up clams here on this one. We'll take those clams and we'll lay them all out for you. And they will be made fun of forever on the internet. Three people who actually watch it. And so, you know what? I love those guys. I love the horror movie nights. I love the one hit thunders. And I love the weird algorithms. I love them. But no, you get this show unedited for better and really for worse.
I didn't realize that we were compromising in this way. We might have to have a meeting over at Weird
Algorithm. I think it should be live.
This.
Yeah.
Live every week.
The pros do it live.
Yeah.
No, they don't. None
of the pros do it live.
This show would be way better if it was edited. Let's just be clear. Nobody wants to hear that garbage. So, Matt, tell me. I'm not too familiar with you. I know you from the network. I know you as the bassist of Wheatus. I know you as a frequent collaborator to some of our favorite musicians. So I'm just going to start with my blanket question. What up with you?
What up? I do play bass in Wheatus. That was my really entry point. I have been doing that since I was 19. I dropped out of college to take that job.
Well, let's talk about this multiverse.
Sure. Yeah, let's dive into it.
Where were you in college and what for?
I was at NYU and I was studying music. I knew I wanted to do music, but I was a very practical kid. I'm still a practical person, but I thought I'd love to do music, but I know the reality of making a living as a musician is not great.
Right.
The odds are not good. So I was like, oh, I'll go to school for it. I'll get a degree. I was focused in music tech, so like recording engineering type stuff. But I also knew that could move to teaching or any other thing. And I was like, well, that's a good safe. Like I'll have jobs I can take with that sort of education. But after three semesters, I met Brendan, the singer of Wheatus, through a mutual friend, crazy connection. And I went in and auditioned, and he offered me the job, and I dropped out.
Now, where'd you grow up?
Long Island. So not too far from where I am now. Yeah.
Yeah. Not so bad. But if you, let's talk about that Matthew that stayed at NYU. I don't think he's doing too many things that differently now. I mean, you had to suffer through three more years, but you're doing the recording engineering stuff. You recorded the last Wheatus thing that they did, didn't you?
I did mixing on the last Wheatus live record. The live record. Yeah. Which was that's true. Yeah, and I've done some of that stuff and I do really enjoy it. What I would be doing, I mean, I'd probably still be doing something with music. I also probably would still have maybe six figures of debt from college.
Oh, there's that.
So I'm pretty grateful that I got out of that. That was a real in hindsight, I'm very grateful that worked out the way that it did. I don't know, maybe I would have wound up where I am, but if there's one thing I've learned, it's that, if you see an opportunity or you meet someone and you feel like it's a good thing, like hang on to it and chase those things. Cause they really, sometimes it's a one shot deal. And if you don't pursue it, then it might not, you can lose your seat in these scenarios. It does happen.
Yeah. And no, look, y'all are watching me talk on the internet to a bunch of kids. All right. If you are on the TikTok, you're going to see a 43-year-old man review his comic books every week. Like, trust me, I have let a lot of I've been at the bus stop many times and been like, I'll catch the next one. That's the next one, and then I just get splashed with water like in an 80s movie. Like that's what this is, where you end up right here, Geekscape. But I'm being facetious. Heidi, my fiance, is watching on Facebook. She says, "You edit later, sweetie. You're about to marry me. You know I don't edit anything."
Wait a minute. Now we're getting mixed reports about the editing that goes on around here.
He wishes I had any capacity for editing anything that comes.
Does this get edited later? Does anyone? I mean, Chris, Matt, and this? No.
I will slap music on the front and Heidi's voice on the back, and that's a Geekscape for you. Barring technical difficulty or like something like that, a little cleanup.
But that's fair. That's an important qualification.
Matthew, I'm too lazy.
I can definitely relate to that.
So this weirdest viral thing on the TikTok, that was from an album before you came, right? The song before you came.
Yeah, that's Teenage Dirtbag, which is definitely what we're best known for. That's the first sweetest record. I joined a few years after that. I came on when that bass player was leaving.
Do you see any of that? Does it boost you? Does it boost anything that helps you out? Live touring?
It does boost the overall. I mean, without getting too into the weeds on it, we are a band that operates like within I get paid salary out of a band budget. And when we blow up and when we have attention, more money goes into that budget. So it does affect me in that sense that like we have more budget to work and to record, to make new records, to just get together and rehearse, because we love to do that even if we don't have shows coming up. And sometimes to go out and do a show that is fun, but not necessarily financially lucrative. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but sometimes you have to take those for...
Exactly, exactly. And that's why you have like a budget that you can afford to like... You know, sometimes it's even like, oh, this is the show pays okay, but we have to pay for our own flights or something like that. Like having money in the pool of the band is how we survive. So when the song does well, I mean, it's even more obtuse with something like TikTok. This was a real crash course for us because we did not know much about TikTok. TikTok was really the first platform where we were completely set to be like, we are probably too old and tired to learn a new social media platform. We were ready to let it go. We were not going to do it. And then, of course, this happened around us. We found out this was happening. We had not posted a thing ever on this platform. And then suddenly it was like, all right, well, I guess we gotta get in there now and figure it out. But in terms of like how you get paid, how you make money from this, that all kind of remains to be seen. In theory, it should be very good for us. But I mean, you know, often these things are like months of trickling through various music industry pipes before it actually gets to us.
But y'all have some fall dates coming up, don't you?
Yeah, we do. We're going out. We're doing like 3 weeks in America, mostly through the Midwest, which should be fun. It's been a kind of a light touring year for us. We did a bunch last year. We went out with the bands Everclear and Hoobastank and Living Color invited us out, which was really fun.
Did y'all do the Hollywood Bowl date on that one?
Which one?
Y'all didn't do a Hollywood Bowl date here.
We did not play Hollywood Bowl.
It was the Greek, something like that. I remember that tour.
It wasn't at the Greek. It was a smaller venue in LA. They wanted it to be, I can't remember. They were somewhere and then it fell through and we had to move it. We were at, I think, the Terragram Ballroom in like downtown LA. Yeah.
I love that place. That place
is
great.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So that was, super fun. We did a lot. This year has been a little bit more quiet. We've done like kind of long weekends out and back. But yeah, it should be good. It's it's been fun. We've done way more touring in America post COVID because international travel remains kind of dicey.
Sure.
Hopefully next year we'll be back. We usually do way more touring in Europe because back in the day when Teenage Dirtbag first came out, it was way more successful in Europe than it was in America, which still blows people's minds. We have to tell people all the time that like Dirtbag, when it came out in the States, was not a hit. It barely got played at all.
I was in college when that came out and I thought it was a catchy song and this and that, but I think between the Weezers, the Weens, and the Weeduses, I had enough of the Weeze. Like I was like, listen, I'm gonna my tent is firmly placed in the Weezer.
Totally fair.
I can't keep taking on these things.
You can't keep taking on these W bands. I get it. I totally get it. Yeah.
It gets out of control. it just gets out of control. So I said, I like their song. I love it when Matt Pinfield spins that record. Mm. But other than that, I gotta dip on this Weedus thing. They have that one song. And I think ultimately going back and revisiting it, I got to grad school and Jim Pellegrinelli, who listens to the show weekly, he was a huge Weedus fan. And he was the guy who was like, you've made a mistake with your life. You need to check out Weedus. I'm glad he clarified, because if he had just been like, you made a mistake with your life, I'd have been like, oh, yeah, no shit, Sherlock, which one? But the Weedus one, he really that really narrowed it down. Yeah. And I get it. I think that's cool. It might have been around the time you started joining the band. Does it allow you to have the life, you know, like you're in so many projects, just looking at the fact that you're working with everybody. I mean, honestly, I think that you're working with like half the geek music sphere. like, are you seeing anybody?
I'm married.
Yeah. Okay. But you got the little creatures running around, the babies.
No babies.
Okay.
No babies.
That's like another step, man.
That's a whole other.
What's that got to take? Like another viral TikTok? What do we got to do with that?
You know,
I'm asking for my own edification.
No.
I was married once. I'm going to get remarried, and I'm looking for like, I don't want to say it's like a run through of like Elden Ring or something, like a Dark Souls game, but like, you know how you like power up every time you play it, you get like tougher and tougher.
Sure,
like this
is
like my second playthrough, mm-hmm. and I'm taking all the knowledge from my first playthrough.
Smart.
But I'm trying to get to that next level. And like, what does that take? Like that's what I'm asking. But that's
what does
the
it
next
take?
Level.
Yeah.
The next level is like the little creatures running around, the babies.
I guess it is. I mean, it has to be, right? What, I don't know what else. Here's what I'll say. I've known too many people who were musicians, who were touring musicians like me, who decided to have a baby with their partner. And they were like, oh, we're going to have this baby, but don't worry. It's going to make no difference. We're still here. We're still doing the music thing. Like, it's not going to change anything like that. And the moment that baby is born, memory erased. It's all gone. And then the next thing I know, they are raising a child and have a day job of some kind. And not knock it. That's totally fine.
No.
But I don't want to go down that path.
Have you talked to Christopher Folios about like the end of Punchline at all?
No.
Just having a kid? I'm being rude. Congratulations to Steve.
Congratulations to Steve.
Who did the theme song to this show and is in Punchline with Chris Ofalios of One Hit Thunder. Congratulations, yes. Steve. He's going to have a baby soon.
And it's going to be totally fine. It's going to be totally fine. People can do it.
The bass
people can
do
it. I've seen people do it.
Those people do it.
I've seen people do it, but I have also seen those people who, as soon as the kid is born, the entire, all your life priorities are shifted, and it's not a bad thing. I'm actually afraid of having that kind of a mental reset. Like, I like it the way it is, and I don't want to not feel the way I feel. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do. Okay, so, all right. You got the TikTok thing. You got this thing. Can you tell me about this podcast? Because I'll tell you the truth. Every time Matt is like, I got this brand new podcast, and he's like, Matthew, you got to understand. Like, for 10 years, this kid's been coming to Geekscape and being like, okay, listen up. We're going to take every episode of blank show that three people watched, and we're going to break it down.
Yeah.
And I understand, like, maybe that's what it is. Like, what's up with the Weird Al thing? And I'm a Weird Al fan, but maybe not as diehard as you and Matthew.
Maybe not, but that's okay.
Yeah. Would that appeal to me? Is the show appeal to me?
I think it probably would. I mean, I think to start with, start with one of his songs that you already know and enjoy, and then maybe use the podcast to introduce yourself to some stuff you maybe don't recognize or haven't paid much attention to. Okay. I mean, it started when I did... in 2020, funny enough, right before the show, you and I were talking about Weezer, but in 2020, when I'm in New York and New York was, you know, completely, truly shut down for months. in the early days of COVID. And I am, you know, a musician and a performer by nature. And I was losing my mind being stuck in my house like so many people. And so my own attempt at doing a Bo Burnham inside before I knew what that was to put myself on Twitch. And I did a live streamed marathon. The first one that I did is I picked up the bass and I played every song by Weezer in a row, which took 10 and a half hours.
And I mean, at that point, they had everything but the last two albums out in the season.
I ended my live stream with End of the Game, which had just come out from Van Weezer, but the Van Weezer record was not out.
No, they kind of, I was so stoked for that album because they also got, like, right in like the first month of the pandemic, they squeezed Hero out.
Yes.
And we were like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And then they were like, surprise, we're going to do
OK Human. Record, yeah.
And then you're going to get the rest of it. I don't know. You're a musician. You talk to musicians. Did it just not like pass muster that the first bit of Van Weezer? Did it need to be cooked a little bit longer?
I think that what it was that the pandemic stopped them from doing the Hella Mega Tour that they were going out with Fall Out Boy and Green Day. And I think that they really wanted Van Weezer for those shows. I think that they thought that like having that material as the new release for an arena rock tour was the vibe they were looking for. And I think they didn't want to have their most recent record be this orchestral pop album, but be out there playing arena rock shows. Like it just didn't jive. So I think they were like, let's move the order. We'll put out the mellow record and then we'll release Van Weezer when we're actually going out finally and doing the tour. That's my
mellow
guess.
Record like felt so appropriate to a bunch of people who had been holed up. Just
that's true as well. Actually, that's you're right. It was definitely more appropriate.
Like, a part of me was like, that just felt like it was a result of them being holed up and zooming with each other, and then having to rely on technology to the point where they're like, you know what? I mean, we're all theorizing here, but that would be awesome. I'll tell you, one of my first jobs in LA was PAing on Marco Siega's version of the Island in the Sun video, and I met Carl. I met Pat. Well, I'd already met Pat through doing the radio show in college, but who's the guitarist?
Brian
Bell was so nice to me that he left me a nice note. I wish I still had it. He left me a note when he had to leave set. I wasn't with him, but they kind of assigned me to Brian, and I would drive him to coffee. And I haven't talked to him. I haven't seen the guy since summer 2001. But I've always thought like, hey, if I run into Brian Bell, I'm just going to tell him how cool he was to be the dude who like took me under his wing for that weekend shoot and was just like, hey, like this is what it's like being in. And he told me, he said, making a good video is not easy.
Yeah.
Like we've sometimes put in that video got reshot by Spike Jonze, but he said, making a good video is not easy. As somebody who went on to make videos, not some that were not very good, I think about that conversation with Brian Bell a lot.
Yeah.
That stuff, on tour now, in the chat up on Twitch says, wait, didn't Jeff Gordon direct the Big Weedus video? And Jeff Gordon was directing a lot of videos back then. Is he was he the director? I think that Jeff also did some of the Real Big Fish videos as well.
I'm double checking right now. Okay. It is. Yeah. Jeff Gordon directed Teenage Dirtbag. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
He
was hot in the late 90s, Jeff Gordon.
Yeah, big time. You know, Brendan was in a band before Weedus called Mr. Jones. And they had a song. It was like a major label signing. They thought they were going to be huge, and it was completely scrapped, like barely came out. But they had a song with a fully mega, mega budget music video that was directed by Mick G. which now in retrospect is insane to think about. This band, like, it must have been easily like it's like a six-figure music video with full on, like, it looks exactly like what you'd expect a video from him to look like, and then it just nobody saw it. But if you're watching this and you're curious to check it out, Mr. Jones, and the song is called Destiny, and it is on YouTube. You can watch it, and Brendan is the guitarist. He actually kind of even looks like Dirtbag Brendan. He's got like a bucket, I think he has a bucket hat, but it's pre-Weedus. Brendan got paid a little bit of money from doing that and took that money and used it to fund the first Weedus album.
But I think with our community of aging rock people that survived the 90s, like everybody has a story like Linus Dotson has a story like that. You know, he plays for Nerf Herder now, but he had size 14, and size 14 had videos that you know didn't come out. There's all sorts of videos that just didn't come out. I mean, Dashboard Confessional had a video that never came, that it aired and then they stripped it off the internet for some reason, right?
For what song? Because I don't think I know this story. It's so interesting.
I would have to sing it, and there's no effing way I'm doing that.
All right. You know, that's fair. We'll figure that out later. I'm very curious about that one.
And on tour now, hitting back with McG, also directed the first Sugar Ray video.
That's right. Yeah,
I think that's a pretty nice little factoid. But you see that you see huge directors and it's like, oh, they started out with Bad Religion's American Jesus video. And then they went on to do the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. And you see the stories like that all the time.
Especially in the 90s, it felt like it was a huge thing for directors in the 90s. Like the amount of even Spike Jonze, you said earlier, Spike Jonze was a absolute music video director. Chris Cunningham.
Remember those DVDs you had?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I still have them. There were those DVDs that were like, they were like Criterion collections.
Yeah, it was like the work of director Michel Gondry, another good one.
Absolutely.
Who did all those music videos, like the White Stripes videos. He is amazing.
I think they released 6 or 7 of those. And if you were into music videos or filmmaking in the early 2000s, you had to own these things.
Yeah, to own those. Yeah.
I'm never giving up mine. They'll have to pry
No, I think I still have mine too, actually. Yeah. It's funny. It's a great testament to see that stuff too and think about like back then. There was so much more money in music that people a label would be like, oh, how much is this music video? $300,000. Great. Spend it. It's totally worth it to have it play on MTV as promotion. Like now a video is you do it because it helps you promote yourself online, but it is a loss. And you're like, how cheaply can we make this and have it be impactful? Because and
can it be a equivalent of the Weedus TikTok challenge?
And can it exactly? Can it also become a Weedus TikTok challenge video?
I think there are record execs, if those still exist, I think they're just sitting around being like, "Can we dirtbag this? is there a dirtbag strategy on this one?"
They might be actually, yeah.
Matt Kelly, he's here to save the day on YouTube. He said, "You cannot find the Hands Down music video anywhere. That's the one." Dashboard.
Oh,
Hands Down, and it was kind of a cool video.
Wasn't it like strobing like psychedelic colors and stuff?
I will tell you right now, it looked like an early iPod ad.
That's exactly right. Yes.
I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this music video, and I'm going to look at a bunch of U2 is going to be downloaded to my phone.
I had no idea that was a thing because I of course also remember that video. Like they did at least play it for a little while. Mm-hmm. I remember that they switched that they played that video for a bit, but then MTV started playing the version of Hands Down from his Unplugged set. That became a recurring, like they made that into a video of its own and they showed that as a separate thing for a while.
Bad theory.
Mm.
That MTV did not have a whole lot of incentive to play that thing.
Yeah. That was their MTV Unplugged version that they could promote. You're promoting themselves at the same time.
Right. So, so this Weird Al thing. It's doing well. I'm really happy with the Weird Al podcast.
Thank you. Am I talking to my boss right now? Is that because suddenly it feels like this is like a performance review for my podcast? What, is it?
Let me tell you.
I'm happy with your numbers so far, but I really feel like we can get it 20% more.
No, let me tell you why you're not talking to your boss. A, all the podcasts on Geekscape are owned by the hosts.
Jonathan owns the Geekscape podcast.
That's it.
Got it.
And number two, we're on this brand new Spotify platform, Geekscapist.
Uh-huh.
And we run ads. You heard an ad at the beginning of this show if you listen to the podcatcher. The first payment was supposedly announced, hey, we're going to send you money. And they were like, can you fill out the tax forms? And I don't mean to put Spotify on blast with their megaphone podcasting platform, but I was like, but George, my partner in Geekscape, and I have twice sent them the email from June where we filled out all the tax forms. And we're like, yeah, here's the email. We're going to resend it a third time. We've definitely given you all the documents you need to pay us.
Mm.
So just so we can give money to Matt Kelly. I mean, let's face it.
That's why we're here.
It's all going to Matt Kelly. So Matt Kelly's sitting there with like a probably a busted roof and it's dripping on him or something like that. He's probably
we gotta get Matt Kelly some
food.
Money to get
we gotta get
fixed,
Matt yeah. Kelly some food. We gotta figure him out. We gotta help him out.
So true.
Matt, if you're in dire straits, just hold on a little longer, buddy. We are trying to get you the Spotify payment for running the Geekscape Network. But literally, there is like tax fuckery going down. And I'm not upset about it yet. Listen, new partnerships have to have all their paperwork ironed out. That's it's going to get ironed out. That being said, Matt, when you come for my wedding in October, I got you. Okay. You're eating on me. All right. Like you're good.
I think this is good for people to hear that the entire operation is above board. All the proper paperwork has been filled out. You guys don't have to feel worried listening to this that this is some sort of an illegal operation.
And you know what? If anybody on the Geekscape Network has a problem, like Matt, we help you out. Like Matt is staying with my friend Andy at the wedding. Matt was like, "Hey, any way I can like save some money like with the hotel thing?" And I said, "Don't get a hotel. You're staying with Andy." And 2 seconds later, I hit up Andy. I said, "This guy, Matt Kelly, it's either like he's coming in for the wedding. Matt, it's his birthday. Matt's birthday is October 14th, the day I'm getting married. And
oh wow,
we cannot let this kid live on the streets. He runs a podcast network. He's not making $1 million.
No,
so we looked out for him.
Well, there you go.
He's not making $1 million going back to this Weird Al Yankovic podcast."
That's like, we're gonna keep circling it.
Your idea, his or his?
It was Matt's idea. It was based on, so again, I started talking about how I did the Weezer live stream, and then after that, because that kind of did well and I actually got some attention doing that, and then I thought, what was another fun artist to do? And I looked at my record collection, and the next thing alphabetically was Weird Al. And I also thought that would be just a wild challenge, because the Weezer thing was hard and really fun, but Weird Al is like hitting every genre of music imaginable. I was like, can I learn all of these big major, like, you know, kind of essential pop hit songs while also like touching all these different genres along the way? And it was incredibly hard.
Wait, you tried it?
I did it. I played every Weird Al song in a row. That one. So the Weezer one took me like 10 and a half hours and Weird Al took me over 12.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
The pandemic broke you.
It completely destroyed me. It was, again, like I was desperate for something to feel like I could function, like some purpose, sure. Some sense of like, what can I do to feel like I'm still myself? And that was the best idea I came up with, was can I perform alone at home on a bass, which is like the worst possible instrument to play alone. It's so not cool if anyone ever asks you to play, if anyone ever offers to play you a solo bass performance, walk away. It's not fun. I'm a bass player. I know my place. No good. No good. So I had to play along to their tracks. Like it was like myself above the original recordings, but it was just whatever I could do to feel like I was doing something interesting and still like, I don't know, performing for people. It's just like, that's the joy of my life. I love to perform. So that's what I wanted to do.
Matthew, we were in a global pandemic. A million Americans died. Just take the fucking time. Just watch the damn Tiger King, buddy.
To be fair, at that point, it was a much smaller number. It felt very appropriate to play Weird Al songs. Okay. I did. I don't know. I took a little bit of a break, but I was just I was completely stir crazy. And it was just, it gave me a sense of purpose at a time where I actually really, it was super, super good to have.
We were talking earlier, the bass is the only one that I've ever played.
Okay.
I have two guitars, but in middle school, I played that bass, but it was an orchestra. And therein, was that my mistake, Matthew, and that I was in the nerdy orchestra? Because by the time I got to high school, I was like, there's no way you're seeing me play an orchestra.
Yeah, orchestral double bass, like this. Yeah. I have one behind me now. It's strung the same way, it's tuned the same way, but it's a completely different instrument than a bass guitar. Your fingering is like, it's all just like a whole different beast. And it's way harder. I mean, this is like stupid hard to play. An electric bass by comparison is a dream. So yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, maybe if you had gotten to play a couple like rock songs, or you had gotten to do a rockabilly thing where you got to swing it over your head or something, like that might have given you a little bit more joy.
I'm going to forgive myself. I was 14 years old. I was a long way from being able to grow a Flavor Saver goatee, which is kind of a prerequisite for having to play that. Like, you have to be, if you're going to play bass, like stand up bass, you should have some form of facial hair, I think.
Here
you
I am.
Look cool, especially like going into the late 90s. Like, oh, you should be able to like flip that thing, stand on it like the dude from Living End. You should be able to, or at least be like in Zoot Suit Riot or something like that. You should at least look like a guy who's like wearing like a bowling shirt or something. But it just it wasn't going to happen for me, man.
Yeah.
I couldn't grow my sideburns down long enough to be chops. I couldn't do the what is it, the Flavor Saver goatee.
Yeah.
It was never going to happen.
Well, I mean, you know, some people just aren't cut out for it. I do think. Yeah. No, I mean, it's okay. You know, you made your choice.
I did.
You let it go. You moved on.
I did bring it up just now. So
you did bring it on. So you haven't totally moved on. It's still maybe a lingering concern.
We're gonna have to explore this. I'm gonna have to explore this in therapy later this week.
I think you should.
Okay, so speaking of lingering concerns and mistakes we may have made from our lives and rehearsals that we may have needed, let's talk about this Nathan Fielder show. I got to tell you, the exposure I have to Nathan Fielder is that Nathan For You show on Comedy Central that I loved.
Yes, me too.
But it has like a mean streak to it.
It kind of does. I mean, it's interesting. Like, it doesn't. I've always thought that Nathan For You is interesting in that I feel like it has all of the structure of a prank show, but it's not really pranking the people. Like he always kind of spins it at the end where it feels more like the joke is on him. Like he makes himself look dumb way more than the other person. Like he is the dummy in the scenario every time. Sometimes his advice is more ludicrous than others. And sometimes you can tell he's like yanking people's chains more than others. But at the end of it, I don't know. I never felt like he was being too overly mean to anyone on that show. And it was more about him showcasing his own insecurities and just kind of foolishness, I guess, really.
But now you've got this show, The Rehearsal. This rehearsal show, like I knew as a fan of Nathan For You that I was going to watch this.
Yeah.
The idea seemed so meta when I saw the trailer for it, and then you watch the first episode and he's helping somebody. The whole plot of it, Geekscape, is if you're not familiar with The Rehearsal, it's getting a second season on HBO Max, but it's basically Nathan Fielder is helping someone rehearse tough moments in their lives. And the first episode is someone who has to admit to his weekly trivia group of friends that he doesn't have a master's degree, and he's told them that he has, and they've gone so far as to send him resumes for job postings that he, without a master's degree, isn't qualified for. And he finally just wants to tell them, guys, I don't have a master's degree, and he's worried about how they're going to react. So Nathan's going to rehearse, and he's going to replicate the bar that they do trivia in. He's going to audition actors and have them play his friends. He's going to get bar patrons in there. He's going to try and make this rehearsal as true to life as possible to get this person capable of making this tough moment, right? To doing this tough moment and facing their fear. I thought it was really sweet, that first episode.
I thought the first episode was really sweet. It was also, talking about Nathan For You, it was the most similar to Nathan For You, where you got that sense of him trying to, he inserts himself into someone else's life and tries to give them advice, better or worse, on how they can improve themselves. And I thought it was really, really sweet. It was incredibly compelling. I mean, if you watch like the process of him practicing and then attempting to actually do this, like in real life, like it's gripping television watching him like sit at the bar and ponder like what he's actually doing.
Sometimes it's just fun to see the lengths to which they replicate things, like to the detail, to the minutia that they're hey, we got every single detail right. The only variable is human nature. And
exactly.
You can argue whether or not there's like a neurodivergency to some of the people on the show. Are they, are they on the spectrum? Are they, you know, what is going on with them? I loved that first episode. And then the onion in the layers of the onion just started getting peeled as you went. That second episode, you meet a woman who wants to have a family. And so Nathan is going to give her a kid, and the kid is going to age every week, every 3 hours. I mean, because of the laws of child actors, this kid is getting cycled out with other kids. I mean, it gets meta so fast when you meet Angela and Angela wants to have a kid. And then you start to think like, the wheels start coming off like pretty fast when you
it starts happening really, really quickly. Well, because it just comes down to it's this in broad strokes, the idea of like all you have to do, Nathan just keeps convincing himself and the people around him that if we just think it through in every possible angle, we can create a perfect simulation of what will actually happen. And you can go into it totally prepared. And all the show keeps revealing is how impossible that actually is. Like, all of these insane things happen. The guy that Angela chooses to be her partner in the house for the rehearsal is next level bonkers crazy.
You don't like Robin? Well, here's the thing, Geekscape.
Robin, who crashed his Scion TC at 100 miles an hour.
So, Geekscape is... I've been asked three times in the last week, as I recommend the show to people and say, hey, if you're not watching the rehearsal, I don't know what you're doing with the television, because this is the best thing to watch on TV. And I've had people say, yeah, I watched it. It's crazy. It's scripted, right? I don't think it's scripted at all. If there's any manipulation there, I mean, there's tons of manipulation. He's actively having people rehearse in pseudo sets and things. But the manipulation is the casting. Like, Angela was cast kind of because she's Angela. And Angela, if you learn as the season goes on, Angela's gonna Angela. She had her own, like, kind of kooky nature to her. And I mean, the seams start to split kind of quickly with her.
Yeah, it does. I mean, one of the things you also can appreciate from watching Nathan For You is that he seems to have an incredible eye for finding the craziest, most interesting people and putting them on his show. Like, his ability to zone in on someone and be like, this person is gold.
They're just left and center.
Yeah,
and
not exactly.
Like a mean way. I think the Angela thing could have worked, but Angela didn't buy in. And you learn that by episode 4, when you realize anytime the cameras aren't on her or Nathan isn't around, she could care less that she's on the TV show. She could care less that she's supposed to be holding up this image of trying to rehearse motherhood. Like, she's not.
Yeah.
The Christianity Judaism thing that happened in episode 5 is kind of intense. Also, super intense. Realizes like he is trying to rehearse. By episode 3, he's trying to do a brand new rehearsal, and just the nature of what he's trying to do becomes unwieldy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, his subject disappears.
He actually loses the subject. Well, yeah, it's very interesting that he tries to go to all these great lengths, and the rehearsals he's trying to plan wind up collapsing around him, because I think he comes to realize that nobody cares about this as much as he does. Like, he is the one who's like so into the rehearsing, and he brings in these other people who on paper go, oh, this sounds interesting. And then they start doing it and they're like, no, I'm out. This is too crazy. I can't do it.
I think I'm gonna disagree with you on the only people who care as much about the rehearsal is him. No, we do too. And I think in the week that we've been talking about you coming on the show,
when
we found out that we're both big rehearsal fans, that Twitter account that I found that is all the fans talking about the rehearsal and finding Robin on Facebook and finding Angela on Cameo and finding all of the people who are in the rehearsal in their actual lives and still being kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they definitely are still, it's still kind of happening. I know that's the craziest thing about it. And I would say, if you're listening to this and you have not seen the show yet, I, you know, cannot recommend it enough. It is also like another super interesting thing it does is it definitely very intentionally, we're kind of hinting at it, really blurs the line. Like, it intentionally makes you question at all times whether or not someone is acting or not, whether someone's an actor or someone's an actual person. But also at times, I think the point he is trying to make is that it's kind of all the same in so many ways. Like, if someone's a real person, but they're on TV, even playing themselves, they're acting kind of, right? Like, they have to, of course they are. They're not who they normally would be, the even as indicated. Exactly. You can see in the show, they even show what Angela does when she thinks there's no cameras there.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So it's highlighting how, like, basically all reality TV in so many ways is fundamentally flawed, dishonest, and manipulative, probably to both the viewer and the people who are on it are being manipulated as well by all these things. Like, it's the amount of stuff that you get the sense he's trying to say with this show is overwhelming to try to wrap your head around all of it.
I don't even know if it's planned.
I have no idea. That's the thing. I don't know how. Yeah.
the Angela thing, well, I think what I was going to say was when you then hire actors into it to play the scripted, to play the people who are real life people, then you have actors. Yeah. It is meta Geekscape. So it'll get away from us real quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Try and deconstruct it. But I think that some of the discoveries aren't scripted. I think the script in the narration actually come from real discoveries. And I was there at 8 o'clock PM Pacific time, waiting for that season finale to drop, expecting to have a bow tied on it and say, yeah, hey, this is going to be really funny. We're going to see this whole thing come to a satisfying conclusion. And I think ultimately, if you'll agree with me, but you don't have to, the one thing that I came away with it was an incredible statement on single motherhood and how single mothers are also fathers. And he just put a bow on that statement, which wasn't even stated literally. It was painful. Was actually really sad. And watching a child actor connect with Nathan playing his father and then have the show end and realize that this is a kid without a dad. He's a child actor. Nathan is playing his father because it's part of the rehearsal. And then when the show ends, he still wants Nathan to be his father. That was hard to watch.
Oh, it's very, very, the end is very sad. Like really shockingly. So like that kid, it completely breaks your heart. And Remy. I think like Remy, yes, thank you. He deserves to be named because he was amazing. It's a comment on motherhood, single motherhood. Absolutely. It's arguably a commentary on what we do to child actors. And just how appropriate or fair it is to put kids of a certain age through this process. But then Nathan does it on his show, but then highlights it at the same time. Like it's a really bold, it's like multiple profound statements at once. And it's unclear exactly if there's a single thing he's trying to land at the very end of that. I'm not even sure what it would be,
but they leave. The one thing I thought you would do was give like a Nathan for you wrap up narration. Mm-hmm. And instead it cut to credits and you're just left having to figure it out for yourself. At first I was unsatisfied by the ending. I'll say that I was unsatisfied with the ending of season mm-hmm. one. And then as I think about it, I was like, no, dude, Sopranos finale, what would you have done that would have worked any better?
Exactly. Yeah. The one thing I loved about the finale, like, and it took me a little while to process this. So this is really hard to explain if you have not seen the show, but if you have, this will make sense what I'm saying. So Nathan gets to this point where he is rehearsing. He's rehearsing pretending to be this kid's dad. That's part of what he's doing on the show, right? But then he gets nervous that he made a mistake with the child. So he goes back and he rehearses as the mom interacting with this same child, but an actor playing the child now. To see where he might have gone wrong and hurt this kid. And at the end, they have it's so crazy. It's so insane and meta. But then at the end, they have this heart to heart. And for the first time in the entire show, you get the sense that Nathan is actually having a real emotional connection with someone. Like they're actually having a real bonding moment. And in that moment, the kid says, "I love you, mommy." And Nathan is supposed to be playing a mom, but he corrects the kid and says, "No, I'm your dad." And like you said, that's a commentary on single motherhood for sure. But also in that moment, that I think is Nathan having a moment of like, as if he had broken character and he was like, "Oh, this is not the rehearsal anymore. This is really me talking." But it's not really him talking because he's so many layers deep in delusion that his breakthrough was being like, "No, I'm not playing the mom anymore. I'm actually your dad." But he's not actually the dad. No. That's also not true. But it was like the closest he ever came to actually having a genuine emotional connection with someone was breaking through one layer of rehearsal up to the next layer.
And that's a throwback to when the actress is playing Angela and accusing him that as Angela, but she's playing Angela. Geekscape, you got to watch this. We're not really spoiling anything because the emotions are genuine in this and the mind fuckery is genuine. It will still hit. Trust me.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
When she says you just want to feel something and you never will. And mm-hmm. First off, cast that girl. She's awesome.
Oh my God. Some of the actors in this show were absolutely amazing.
And the improvisational writing was really good. And yeah. I don't know how much of that stuff was fed, but I'll tell you, anybody who asks me if it's scripted, I don't think it's scripted. I think it's set up. And it's okay. Like, there are bullet points to hit. Sure. There are beats to hit. Yeah. Sure. But I think that everybody involved in this did a really good job of nailing it. And we'll see what season two is. I made a joke on Twitter that season two of the rehearsal is just going to be Nathan Fielder walking WB through refixing the DC Entertainment Universe. All right, this is how you make a new Superman movie.
Here's what you need to do.
Here's how you make the Justice League, and let's rehearse putting together a multi-billion-dollar entertainment empire.
Yeah,
because geeks, you're not too happy with Warner Brothers, are you right now? Are you? You're just not. They canceled your Batgirl. You don't even know what they're doing right now with the DC stuff. I can't get into it, but I will tell you, as far as Warner Brothers and HBO Max goes, I was not ready to say this, Geekscapists, because the embers of Game of Thrones season, the last two seasons, still burn right here. And we've been burned before with this Game of Thrones stuff. Those last two seasons of Game of Thrones hurt. But I'll tell you right now, I still checked out this House of the Dragon thing that was the prequel to Game of Thrones series. And I was like, no, you fooled me once. But Geekscapists, they're getting ready to fool me again, because I watched the first episode of House of the Dragon, and I thought it was really, really good. Damn it. And I was like, where was this the last two seasons of Game of Thrones? Where was this care to the characters? Where was this level of detail to the world? Where was this pacing where everybody had a fully fleshed out role in relationship to each other? Where was this attention to the history? This was what we got the first couple seasons of Game of Thrones, and it just felt like it was shot out of a can in the last two seasons just to wrap things up in a very unsatisfying way. It felt very slapdash, and a lot of people came out of the last two seasons of Game of Thrones pretty unsatisfied with that's how you wrap this up after setting up for so long. I actually like this pilot for the House of the Dragon more than I like that first Game of Thrones pilot. And maybe because I'm already familiar with the world, so I'm able to get more out of it. Because let's face it, if you haven't read the books, that first Game of Thrones pilot with Sean Bean and all that, there was a lot of homework you had to do, and there was a lot of characters thrown at you, and you were swimming for a lot of it. With this one, you're more familiar with the world. You know that it's roughly 200 years before what you've seen, and they do a really good job of placing all the pieces on the board and seeing how things are going to set up. It's violent. It's definitely gross. You're definitely going to have some squeamish moments where people get hurt in nasty ways in some medieval fantasy fashions. But I like the relationships. I think they're engaging. I think Reese Hefens is an awesome actor. He does a good job. And Matt Smith is fantastic. Everybody in this is doing well. I mean, this is the Game of Thrones you want and didn't get the last two seasons of the original series. So this has my endorsement. And I will tell you, I'm going to watch it every weekend excitedly, but also like bracing for a heartbreak. So, you know, so. Yeah, I'm recommending the House of the Dragon. I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was great.
Damn. So can I ask you, as someone, because I was one of those people, I was behind on the original Game of Thrones, and then as I was in the process of catching up, those last couple seasons started running, and I started just hearing bad things, and it made me stop. Like, I just never finished the original Game of Thrones. Sure. But I know this is also a prequel, 200 years, like, if I just started watching this, would that be cool, or am I going to be completely lost?
I think there's some emotional resonance in knowing how these houses are 200 years later. But no, these are all characters you don't need to know the history.
It's all different people, right?
You don't need to know how they're all new. You kind of know where the houses go for Game of Thrones, like, because you know where they're going to be, that where the houses are going to be situated in the next 200 years.
Right.
But you get to see them being established here, and you get to see this 200 year version where the Stark house was, where the Targaryen house was. Not a whole lot of Lannister going on here, but you get to see some of it. And the acting's strong, the art direction's strong, everything's strong in this one. And you're just like, damn, where was this in the last two seasons of Game of Thrones? Well, it's right here. And if you can go ahead and deal, because you're going to be getting a whole lot of Game of Thrones in the next billion years. We got Lord of the Rings. Yes. We won. As I said at the opening, we won. You're getting Lord of the Rings. You're getting a Dungeons and Dragons movie in the spring that looks a hell of a lot of fun. You nerds, we won, okay? Like, all I had to do was sacrifice playing the bass in middle school. And now I was like, yep, now we'll see who's laughing now.
Jonathan, we thank you for your service.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I can't go this far, geek.
Yeah.
I regret it all the time, not sticking with this. I do.
You know what? It's never too late to learn. It's never too late to learn. I'm serious. It's not. A musical instrument, you can learn anytime. You can learn a musical instrument anytime.
Yeah, the kazoo. Matthew, come on.
No, I'm serious. Oh, then get
it. I barely know English.
Get an electric bass. You'll be playing electric bass in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Before the show, you said if Chris Ofalius can do it, anybody can. Is that what you said before the show? I'm quoting you.
I don't think so.
Chris, I'm only saying that to put him in a barrel.
That was really good. For a second there, I actually was like, oh my God, did I say that? That's crazy.
Horribly rude.
That's a crazy thing to say.
It's inside baseball here on the Geekscape Network. Geekscapeus. Gossiping about Geekscapeus.
Yeah.
You like this community, Matthew? What do you think as we wrap up the show? You like this whole community we've built?
Yeah, absolutely. So far, it's been great. I mean, I've been having so much fun. It's really nice to get to spend some time with you. Obviously, I've spent almost all my time with Matt Kelly, who's been great and very... he's been great. I mean,
he's like a kid brother to me, Matthew.
The leak in the roof is still a work in progress. They got to get that squared away. But otherwise, you know, he's great.
Yeah,
Matt. So, no, it's been wonderful.
Yeah. Matt is one of my groomsmen, that Matt Kelly.
Ah.
And I love him.
I do too.
And I love everybody here on the network. And I just kind of like, I'm going to be stupid and sappy right now, but remember when you're a kid and you had this idealistic dream that all of your friends and family were all going to we're going to grow up and we're going to live on the same block in the same neighborhood. And we're everybody I love is going to be right there.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, Geekscape is that. And that may be ridiculous, but it is the same things that I celebrated then with the comic books, the video games, and the movies, and the same idealism that I never grew out of. That's kind of what I think Matt Kelly has, and we all kind of still celebrate those things. And I don't think that you have to give those up for adulthood. I think that you can still celebrate the positivity of seeing your neighbors and your friends every day. We've simply built a place where that can happen.
Yeah.
And that's not just, this isn't just a podcast network. It's a community first and foremost. And as I've described it in the early days, I want to build something that survives me walking off the wrong curb. Yeah. Jonathan walks off the wrong curb and he goes Splatoon and fails the Farragher test. The Geekscape Network and community hopefully survive and keep going. And Geekscape, as we get close to, as we enter the fall and get close to LA Comic Con and some of that stuff, and another probably live stream for the holidays, there's so much we're doing. I hope some of the LA Comic Con stuff comes to fruition because it's stuff we've never done before, and it will add an element to Geekscape that I think is really exciting. And hopefully they happen. We're always planning on things beyond podcasts, beyond live streams, beyond being at a local convention. It's just a matter of can it happen? Who knows? We're exploring those partnerships all the time. And Matthew, I got to tell you, I love having a partnership with you, man. You getting to know
Thank you.
It's been a lot of fun this past hour.
Yeah, likewise.
Before this past weekend.
No, we had never. It's a new thing, and it's been a blast. So, yeah, thank you so much for having me. And again, it's been really. I've been honored to be part of the Geekscape Network, and I loved everything you just said. I really do think at the end of the day, it's community, right? That's what we all we're all drawn to community. Everyone wants to, we want to feel that kind of kinship and connection, and any sort of way to make that happen is a good thing.
Yeah. I think it'll keep you from running through another discography if we have a plague.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to run through the discography alone, brother.
Yeah, that's true. I'll get more people involved. Yeah, I'll get you on the kazoo, like you just said. We'll get you.
You know Guster?
Yeah, sure.
I played the triangle for Guster.
No way, really?
Yeah, they were still going as this was summer of 95. They played a summer camp, and I lied to them and said that I played the as they were setting up. They were still going as Gus at the time. Mm. And they were I was joking with them, as I do with everyone, because why be real?
Sure.
Why be vulnerable? And I was like, yeah, I play an instrument. And they're like, what? I said, a triangle. They said, if you could find a triangle by the time we play, you're going to come up on stage and play with us. And I scoured for the next 2 hours for a triangle, and I found it, and I played
it. And you found a triangle.
I don't know how to play a triangle, but I banged the hell out of it during one of their songs.
I can't believe you could find a triangle. I feel like right now, if you asked me to find one in 2 hours, I wouldn't be able to.
You just had to go to the music room at a college, and they had it.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
Insane. You can listen to Matthew Milligan here on the Geekscape Network as the co-host or host. I don't know what the are you the host and Matt's the co-host?
I mean, I think we're going with just dual co-hosts.
Okay.
Right. If one of us is host above the other, that's going to be a tough conversation for later. We have not.
Let me tell you, as somebody who's known Matt Kelly for a very long time, you give that kid an inch, he takes a mile.
This is it. Right? So now we're on record. This is a 50-50 scenario. All right. Okay. Co-host and co-host.
Okay. You hear that, Kelly? Second Spotify clears.
As soon as it clears.
Going to Milligan.
After you fix the leak, you can recoup the cost of the leak, and then we'll talk.
So Geekscape, you can listen to Matthew every week on the Weird Algorithm podcast, which is tearing up the charts for the Geekscape Network. And we have tons of other shows. Just go to your favorite podcatcher, search for Geekscape. You're going to find this flagship podcast, where we're a mile wide and an inch deep in knowledge on all of that. And then you can find all the more detailed shows about filmmaking, video games. We got wrestling. We got all sorts of stuff on the network. So just search for Geekscape, you'll find us. And then we're obviously on social media, whether it's the Facebook, the Tickety Talks, the Instagrams, and all that stuff. Search for Geekscape. That's where we hang our hats. Come hang with us. It's that community we're talking about. Anything else to add, Matt? Where's the best place to find you, sir?
You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, my handle, Twitter, although I really don't tweet anymore. But my handle everywhere is Millie Milligan, MILLIGAN. And I have a website, which is matthew-milligan.com, which tells you like who I'm playing with and when. I have a bunch of shows, as I mentioned, with Weedus coming up in the Midwest. And beyond that, some other cool stuff, I think, by the end of this year. I can't say yet, but working with some other fun people. It should be good. Should be good.
Yeah. Dude, we're excited, and the best place you can hear it is by following Matthew on the socials. And
and obviously, keep as you said, keep listening to the Weird Algorithm podcast, or check it out if you haven't yet. You do not need to be a diehard Weird Al fan to appreciate it. We just did an episode where we talked way more about the B-52s than Weird Al. Don't even worry about that. Just tune in with us and hear Matt and I chat about all manner of things.
Sounds like a good time. Geekscapists, thank you for checking us out, and we will see you next time. Till then, don't hate, create.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.